That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What we have is a great team of even alders that sit on this committee. That's a diversified group. So in order to make change, first you got to listen.
Hi, everybody. I'm Fran Spielman. My guest this week is the chairman of the City Council's Revenue Subcommittee, freshman Alderman William Hall. Alderman, thanks for joining us.
Well, first of all, Fran, thank you for having me, and thank you for being eyes and ears to the community and the city of Chicago. It's an honor to be on with you today. Thank you.
Well, it's an honor to have you, sir. You are the newly elected alderman of the 6th Ward, which includes parts of Chatham, West Lawn, Park Manor, yeah, West Chesterfield, Auburn, Gresham, and Englewood. How did a freshman alderman manage to become chairman of the subcommittee that Mayor Brandon Johnson appointed to lead the all-important search for new revenue for the city of Chicago?
Well, friend, it's real simple. Our mayor is very fair. Our mayor is very creative, and our mayor is innovative. And so when looking at revenue, he looks at revenue through the lens of parity, equity, fair shot for everyone, and most of all, looking to the future, building on sustainable approaches to make Chicago a safer, better place for everyone.
And what made you the choice for that? What made you the right guy at the right
time?
Well,
you know, I don't know if I can answer that on his behalf, but what I will say is that, you know, my work in finance has been it's been a part of my journey for some time now. I mean, as a pastor first, you know, managing and generating revenue beyond the collection plate is a 52-week assignment. But beyond the faith-based work that I've done, I'm an econ major from the DePaul University, and looking at micro and macroeconomics through the lens of especially community, that's what I've done throughout my public service and private career. And for me, you know, I look at Chicago as a multi-billion dollar global economy, the same way our mayor and others in city council do. And so the goal for me is to, how do we create micro hubs of revenue that can make a macro impact, and not just the macro economics that don't make a micro impact? So essentially what we're looking at is a community-based, corporate-based, social responsibility approach to generating revenue for whosoever will that calls Chicago home.
So we'll talk about the search for revenue in a minute. Let's talk a little bit about you and get to know you. You replaced veteran Alderman Rod Sawyer, who opted to run for mayor instead of seeking a fourth term. He is the son of former Mayor Eugene Sawyer, who was elected infamously by his peers to serve as acting mayor after the death of Harold Washington at that infamous just about all night meeting where Dick Mell jumped on the desk and said, "We have a mayor." Why did the senior pastor of Chatham's St. James Community Church, a man who has lived on the same block for nearly 40 years, decide to run for alderman and join the Chicago City Council?
Well, you know, my predecessor, Alderman Sawyer, I'll tell you this, man, such a great guy. He reflects the generosity and the true hospitality of his father, who I never met, but I hear so many stories about the fact that he was a gentleman, he was a scholar, and he was a servant, and that is seen in the DNA of his son. Alderman Sawyer. And so Alderman Sawyer simply picked up the phone and said, hey, I think you can do this. And he did haze me. He did, you know, challenge me to rise to the occasion of knocking doors, reaching out to people and explaining the possibilities of the ward. And the way in which he did it is the way in which I believe you ought to. You know, he gave me a lot of runway. He gave me, and what I mean by runway is he, you know, at times encouraged me, offered his support, even to the point where about, you know, even while running for mayor and, you know, even while he was still in other aspects of politics in the transition from, you know, the alderman into his current retirement state of politics, but now a good lobbyist. But he literally, you know, offered himself and made himself available just to give me common sense wisdom. He's given me space, but he's been close enough to let me know that, hey, if you need me, I'm here, which is soon going to have some funny conversations. And, you know, in the same lineage of the Senator Raphael Warnock, who's a pastor at the historical Ebenezer Church in Atlanta. He's a great senator from the state of Georgia. While we waited on the balance of our democracy, hoping that he won, there was a pastor that did it. You know, when we look at Reverend Adam Clayton Powell, powerful congressman out of New York. Matter of fact, 125th Street, Clayton Powell has a street named after him, but the pastor of the Abyssinian Baptist Church, strong church in the city of New York. And so in that same lineage, I follow in those footsteps because for me, you know, my religion is love. And, you know, we can argue, disagree about religious practices and liturgy and, you know, other sacred elements, but nobody will ever argue about the power of love. Nobody will argue about helping somebody along the way. And nobody will argue about making sure that we all have a fair share of prosperity. And that's the lineage, the justice work. That's what drives me. Meaning for me, when I wake up every day, how can we make sure more people are at this table? Because this work is about addition and not subtraction. And so the wisdom of the Sawyer family and the example set by others who are still doing this work and have done this work, both as faith and community, faith and action, is my motivation.
And so what is the best and most important piece of advice that Rod Sawyer gave you?
On day one, answer the phones. For real.
Well, you answered the phone for me. I appreciate that.
I kid you not, right? Like, we're sitting in his office and he's, you know, he's packing up some things. And again, I mean, such a generous, hospitable, nice, intelligent man. So he's packing up, right? And he gives me this book, friend. It's like the zoning book for the city that shows where the zoning for every ward, every corner in the city. He gives me that. And then he says to me, he says, now look, on May 16th, make sure somebody's answering the phone because, oh, they're getting ready to call you. And so, I mean, he's just that type of guy. That's the advice that I hold to so much to the point that I have literally in my office right now, I'm looking at four people.
You have a sign that says answer the phone with a exclamation point.
Ma'am, we not only answer the phones, we log every call. We have had close to 8,000 calls in this office, and we couple it with a letter to let them know that we've heard you and where we could direct you of what we've delivered for the constituent in our ward.
How many rings do you answer?
No, seriously, we've had over 8,000 calls. And so the funny thing is that I'm in a community meeting, right? And so we have this section for our safety report coming from, you know, a different precinct. And so the 6th district gets up there and says, hey, so far year to date, we've had 3,000 and some calls from the 6th ward. Now this is year to date, and it was at the end of the year last year. So I'm saying to myself, well, from May into the end of the year, if it's total over 3,000, so y'all have really only dealt with 1,500 calls since I've been alderman. And at the time, we were at close to 5,000 calls. So in my mind, I'm saying more people have called our office than they have the police. So at the end of the day, it's the work, but it's worth it. It's really worth it, friend.
You say you want an intergenerational, thriving, and safe community. Why don't we have that now?
Well, a few reasons. Number one, unfortunately, we've cut down the wisdom tree. You know, I mean, when I was growing up, you literally sat on the porch. You listened to your elders. I grew up on the block with Miss Mamie Till. the mother of Emmett Till. It was an honor to ride our bikes, but she would literally stand right in front of our home and we would stop our bikes, of course, not put them on the grass, and listen to her tell us the stories of Emmett. Her husband, Gene Mobley, who was the barbershop right down the street from our home while he was cutting our hair as a kid. We listened to those stories. We had neighbors sitting on the porch. We had block clubs that we were drug to. We had activities. The parks were the place to be. And so over time, modernity, which encompasses technology that has disconnected us and re-socialized us in a way where conversations are not essential, is all about posting and TikToking. And so what it has done is it's created a caveat, a line, a wedge in which seniors are not seen as the source of wisdom. Rather, it is an Instagram post or a 10-second commercial. And so what we have to get back to is literally embracing the wisdom trees. And so this ward is a wisdom tree. It's a forest. And so what I want to do is encompass the stories, the wisdom of Senator Roland Burris. For Christ's sakes, this is the third, I believe, Black United States Senator in United States history. I mean, right here in our ward, we have Darlene Tribute. We have the son of the second Black mayor in, you know, Chicago history in this ward. I mean, the list goes on and on. We have President Carrie Steele, who's the daughter of the sixth ward. Her father was a former alderman, Judge Fred Ludrina Lau, just to name a few, not encompassing the landmarks that we have in this ward, right? And so we're looking for a revival of wisdom, but also working together. You know, I'm 39, soon to be 40. I don't know it all, don't want to know it all. And so the leadership and guidance of my elders is what's going to help me become a
good. But how do you get these young kids who are so addicted to their phones and all the other technology stuff to listen to the elders, to listen to the wisdom of those elders, and to take that advice and to take that discipline when they don't seem to care anymore?
Well, one of the things we're going to do in this ward is we're going to jumper cable, revive, energize our block clubs. I do believe that block clubs are the hub. I mean, this year, well, last year, rather, we filled out, signed, sealed, delivered over 30 block club permits to have parties, right? And walking on these blocks, it was unbelievable the amount of energy and joy that was seen in the eyes of kids as they was eating hot dogs, running from this house to that house, basketball. That should be a norm. We got to get back to not just block parties, but block connectivity. When I was growing up, you know, at the end of the day, I lived on Wabash, still do live on Wabash, but Indiana, Michigan had eyes on us, right? And so these block clubs, unfortunately, have dissolved or just dismantled or just disconnected. And so I do believe that's going to be the key. The second way is, you know, some of the events that we're doing. We're having a Nat King Cole jazz series this summer in which we're looking forward to having some of the best musicians come. We have Cynthia Collier's son, Jeremiah Collier, and his brother. They are some world-renowned musicians that in the summer on their porch, they play these amazing instruments. And it's like Baby Ravinia. And so the lawn chair energy of elders sitting with young people who play these instruments. Music is the sound of the soul. And so what I'm looking forward to doing is hosting events, reviving block clubs, and most of all, you know, to be honest with you, bridging the technology and bridging the fun that the young people have and doing it with our elders. One of the things that really hurt me was when Mathers left. Mathers was right there on 83rd and Wabash. Now, mind you, they're coming back, and I can't tell you all of what's coming too soon, friend. But, you know, Mathers had a great cafe. They had computer programming. They had a little gym in there. And what it did also was food brought everybody together. So you on one side, you're having lunch with your grandma before she goes to her computer class, right? And so I just believe that you have to be intentional about intersectionality of generations and doing it through events, food, and culture. That's always the recipe to bring everybody together.
When you were a teenager, there was a turning point for you, a day when instead of hanging out with your friends, you went to work, somebody opened fire on your friend's car that day after mistaking it for somebody else's car and bullets pierced the seat that you would have been normally sitting in. It's like a sliding doors moment. What if you missed the train? What if you caught the train? You just happened to be lucky that day. You could have been killed. What did that do to change your life, that reality, that change of direction there?
What it did for me is, in the words of my father, whose birthday is this month, friend, what it did was, as my father used to tell me, he used to say this, not as a scare tactic, but a truth moment. Every time, or often when I left, rather, he would say to me, I have a $10,000 policy, one of them, on your life if you die. At least I will have enough money to bury you. And what that moment reminded me of is that I didn't want my dad to bury me. And, you know, it really gave me, and I remember the call like yesterday, and remembering even now, a flashback of all of what people did for me and the disappointment I would render to them simply by being a knucklehead. And, you know, everybody has their chapters in their life where they feel that they can conquer the world as a teenager, or that as my grandmama would say, smelling yourself. And so, you know, what I smelt was the possibility of not fulfilling purpose. And, you know, at that age, purpose for me was simply work hard, keep the faith, and treat people right. And that purpose, before coming into the understanding of the community and the work that I would do as a public servant, it was in that moment that I said I didn't want to disappoint, you know, Miss Clark, Miss Williams, you know, the Morgans, Mr. Gilbert, my father, my mother, by simply smelling myself and being a knucklehead. So I had to reengage, had to rededicate myself, realign with those principles of working hard, keeping my faith, and treat people right. And, you know, I thank God that I didn't die, but I also redetermined and rededicated myself to being something in life and not just a statistic.
There was a point when you say everything changed on your block. There was no more sense of togetherness among neighbors. Yeah. Crime made people afraid to come out of their homes. They weren't taking care of each other. They were afraid to open their doors. How do we get back to that?
Yeah, we know. I do believe that the work of our Chicago police is very important. You know, my mantra to our commanders and every officer I see is, I'm praying and I believe you're going to get back home safe. And, you know, we have to get back to officer friendly and not be paranoid about Officer Scary, especially when you see how much money Officer Scary is causing our city, taking away revenue through lawsuits because of horrible behavior. And so the presence of police officers was a factor when I was growing up. We saw officers literally walking down the street. You knew where officers lived. And so creating a safety net of security and not a fear-mongering car running around that may grab you, lock you up, and throw you away. That's what we have to, you know, balance the both and. We need the presence of our police officers to serve and protect, but we also need to change and deconstruct the policies that made these neighborhoods the way they are. Friend, listen, I have one grocery store, Aldi, on 72nd and State. I don't have any hospitals in this ward, right? The closest to us is St. Bernard, for Christ's sakes. I mean, it's a great hospital. It's coming back to what it was, but Benji Wilson died at that hospital. It was a rumor. It was a whisper at the dinner table. It was something that was understood as Black folks. If you want to die, just go to St. Bernard, right? Michael Reese was our hope and our hub. That's all we had. Jackson Park was never that for us as Black people. And so we closed Michael Reese. Jackson Park is more about outpatient and, you know, rehab services for those who are battling addiction. And then St. Bernard, though it's coming back and latest and the greatest, is still not trustworthy for Black people. And so you take away healthcare options, no food options. I mean, we have some of the best schools in the city now. Let's be clear. Shout out to Dixon, McDade, Neil, Leonard. I mean, we got some of the best in the city. Inglewood STEM, brand new campus, not even 10 years old, producing associate credits for kids to get, it's two-year colleges. They're already starting in city colleges before they graduate. Simeon Tech program to be respected in the home of Mr. Everett. So, I mean, there's so many assets that do make community, but so much that's not in the community. And, you know, coupled with no presence of police, coupled with the fact that people are in pain, and then we had a failed economy, right? When the housing crisis came, you know, it really became a crippling effect for the community. Now, aging, you can't beat Father Time, right? So when Mr. Gilbert passed away and Miss Williams passed away, when Miss Clark passed away, when the Morgans passed away, when my father passed away, these were those who were active in block clubs. And so rather than having families moved in, you know, unfortunately, things turn into investment properties. So you don't know who your neighbor is because they don't even see the value of the home that they live in some cases. And in other cases, they were coming in, out, just on the road making money as a transient that just was grateful to have a backyard. So the culture changed. The crisis happened with the market. A disconnect with police officers equals In addition to a lapse of fair and equitable businesses that are investment tools to human life equals mayhem. But we're changing that. Like, real talk, friend, we're seeing a different wave in this war. And I'm not saying it because of the position I hold as an elected official. No, I'm saying it because I'm seeing the results. We have police officers now committed to making 75th Street the place to not only come and have some great ribs at Limbs, a slice of cake at Brown Sugar, but to also go to the President's Lounge and not be paranoid about being shot when you leave. Because we did have a crisis 3 years ago on 75th Street, right? We've created a culture of partnership between neighbors, business, and law enforcement. We looking
at. But you still had two mass shootings in 2 days in your ward, one of those killing a 14-year-old boy.
Yeah. And so, again, when we do have moments like that, that doesn't stop and deter. I mean, we've had record low turnout. I mean, we've had record low crime as well thus far, right? And we also had last week a day in which in years we have not seen nobody pulled a gun and nobody shot a gun. But let's make it specific about the Sixth Ward that happened after being sworn in. When the first holiday came, Memorial Day, there was not an act of violence with a gun in this ward. Then Juneteenth came, it happened again. Then the 4th of July came, it happened again. Then when the last holiday came, which was Labor Day, every major holiday, nobody got killed in this ward. Nobody can find a record of that in the history of this ward. And that's
so
because
you're making steady and slow progress. Let's talk about the revenue search. Mayor Johnson campaigned on a promise to raise taxes, fines, and fees by $800 million to help bankroll $1 billion in investments in people that are the cornerstone of his anti-violence strategy. But in his first budget, he punts the search for new revenue to your subcommittee, your revenue subcommittee. How is it going? Where are you focusing?
Well, it's going great because I have this, I'm sitting next to the co-chair, which is the finance chair, Chairwoman Pat Dow, one of the wisest women in city council, stands tall, literally and figuratively, with so much wisdom. I pull from her tree. And so a lot of conversations that I've had, a lot of documents I looked at, a lot of discussions I've had with her have really been able to help me see failed revenue ideas, have helped me to see possibilities. And the reason why some things have not happened with revenue is due to politics. And so what we have is a great team of even alders that sit on this committee. That's a diversified group. So in order to make change, first you got to listen. It's the reason
why
God
gave us. Let's talk about ideas, though. Yeah. You're focusing in part on the 30 to 35% retail vacancy rate in the Central Business District. How do you put that to work for the city of Chicago?
Well, we have to look at the fact that the retail model has changed. That ain't the mayor's fault. Let's go to Detroit. We can go all over the country. They're packing up and leaving simply because brick and mortar is no longer their model. You shut down any economy for 2 years and give people phones. Now the gig economy as well as digital economy is the new norm. So digital currency is moving faster than brick and mortar as well as paper. You don't even use cash 90% of the time in any place. It's either QR code, tap to go, and then cash is the last option. And so we're not going to blame this mayor. We're not going to blame the council for people redefining their retail model. Period. That's a United States move. Not a Chicago, Brandon Johnson, city council is doing a bad job. That's number one. Number two, the vacancy space, we have to reimagine the space. Right now, as much as we see the downward shift of brick and mortar, you look at a city like New York, who's making millions of dollars a day on advertisement and digital marketing in Times Square. So as much as there is vacancy, even in New York, there's still major revenue coming in through those billboards. So we're going to look at a model in which we maximize digital media without the redesigning the beautiful integrity of our downtown postcard. So what we must look at is, number one, revenue streams that include digital marketing, especially because we have high visibility buildings. We have high visibility window space downtown in the Central Michigan Avenue district. So that's number one. So that's
how would that work, though, sir? You take a vacant, you know, all these vacant spaces, retail spaces on Michigan Avenue, for example, or State mm-hmm. Street. What do you do with that?
Well, you sit with the company that has the capacity to do it. You look at the business structure. You project a revenue, you bring it for before the committee, all in favor, aye. It's not that complex. And that's what we're moving
towards. Where does the city get the money? Doesn't the landlord, let's say, for example, that you put digital advertising in the window of that empty space, that would go to the person who owns the building, right? Or rents that space.
Well, no, we have to create licenses. We have to create taxes that make it fair, right? Let's look at New York. Those signs are not free. And those signs are generating millions of dollars.
Those are outdoor, though. Those are outdoor space.
And again,
where do you envision this new digital advertising? In the window of these empty buildings or on the outside?
Again, and you see it already in motion. So, I mean, again, that's what we're looking at. Every corner, every space, what makes sense without taking away the architectural integrity that makes this city so great. So, again, we already have seen the model work in New York. Sometimes you don't need to recreate the wheel. You just need to add a little oil to it. And so the Chicago approach might not be too far from New York's approach. But one thing we will take a hard look at is digital revenue and marketing. We are a global city with a global message, with a global market. And it makes
outdoor,
no sense.
Outdoor digital?
Outdoor, nothing. Nothing is off limits, friend.
The window or both?
Outdoor in the window. We look at trains. We look at buses. We look at train stations. We look at bus stations. There's so many possibilities when it comes to digital marketing. And again, when we look at those conversations, the construction of that cost is not necessarily going to be on the burden of the city in all cases. So there are some companies that will do the build out. But for us, we have to figure out how do we corner the licensing as a revenue stream, as well as the taxation. That doesn't hurt our city. That helps our city. The same way that NASCAR spends 36 hours showing a race on TV, which is nothing but a big old advertisement to say to the entire world, come to this great city called Chicago.
But wouldn't that make Chicago look cheesy?
Well, I mean, I don't think that innovative ideas are cheesy. I mean, first of all, again,
but
we're not going to jump
into it. If it's a lot of digital stuff, people will say, oh, you're diminishing, you're cheapening the look of Chicago.
Oh, come on,
city.
Friend. I just said
I'm playing Bill. I play devil's advocate here.
No, it's okay, friend. But again, we will always maintain the postcard of our city, but we will look at innovative ways to digitally share other people's stories and market. Listen, we got trains. We got bus stops. We got train stations. There are so many ways in which we can advertise and we can say to companies and as well as other entities, come share your message in a global market. So again, we're not going to put a big old advertisement board on the Sears Tower, for Christ's sakes. I mean, we're not going to, again, take away the beautiful architectural integrity, but what we can do is be innovative. I mean, look at merchandise market in the summertime, friend. I mean, it's a huge place for art on that building. What would the day look like if you have to get the license to do that? I mean, let's be innovative. Along the river, as beautiful as that new Riverwalk is, can you imagine what maybe some digital on the river would look like? So, I mean, we're not going to, again, for the fourth time, take away from the integrity of some of the greatest architectural designs seen in the world. But what we are going to do is look at the most innovative way to articulate to those who want to partner with our city to advertise their message. For sure.
Now, you've also mentioned the idea of Migs Field becoming a heliport.
Yeah,
talk about
absolutely.
That a little bit.
Yeah, so we, again, using innovation. When Uber can, you know, when you go to Dubai, you can Uber a helicopter, right? You can go to different parts of the world and Uber in a helicopter, friend. I mean, for Christ's sakes, we can look at other ways to involve, again, the technology as well as different forms of transportation. United Airlines is on the cusp of that, right? Looking at a model in which it's safe for the environment as well as safe to transport people downtown to our local airports. It might not be Migs Field, but we do have heliports in the city of Chicago. Matter of fact, Cook County Hospital, the former site, has a heliport right there that's not even being used. We have a heliport right off of Halsted, in which it is a tourist attraction, in which they're flying helicopters all day off of 31st, a little bit past Halsted. And so to look at the idea of utilizing heliports as a means of transportation, again, revenue source, landing fees, licensing to do that, it's a win-win. People don't like sitting in cars 30, 40, 50 minutes getting to and from the airport. When we had Migs Fields, the reason why that airport was a great asset to the city is that you can come in, do business in Chicago and get out. Right. And so we need to look at the easiest, safest way to get people to and from our busiest airport in the nation, O'Hare, because when we look at the fact that if the president, former president of the United States of America, can fly Air Force One into O'Hare and then land at McCormick Place's parking lot, which I had the opportunity to witness a few times in my lifetime, why can't we recreate that now?
So you would take Miggs Field, which daily turned into a park after carving giant X's in the middle of the night on that one runway, infamously and very, very controversially. And you would do what with it? Would you turn the park back into an airport, or what would you do?
Would you just use Miggs as a heliport anyway
and leave the park?
Yeah, well, I mean, we have to look at everything involved in that, right? We have to look at the land covenant. We have to look at park space. We have to also preserve our nature, right? Now, one thing I will say about this mayor is that this mayor is trying to preserve Chicago. I mean, let's look at last summer. We had a lot of people was having asthma attacks because of the smoke blowing in from Canada. I mean, time and time again, we have the greatest asset, which is our water. But if we're not careful, that gift that we have, that is one of the largest source of fresh water in the world, might begin to have its own day and doom. So we have to be careful about innovation that takes away park space and natural preserve. I mean, but Friends of the Park needs to be a little bit more friendly. And so we have to find a way to, again, construct something that's convenient, that's a revenue source, but makes sense. And it does. So if United wants to have helicopter flights, let's figure out a way in which we have fair landing fees in locations that Chicagoans can use. It's already on the cusp. So for us to be a part of a new movement and a new trend supported by one of the largest airlines in the world, again, Chicago is doing what no other city is doing. And we are not using the backs of working class people in order to generate revenue to do it.
What about the VIP toll road that runs from Randolph to McCormick Place that only the elected officials and some conventioneers use? Could the city turn that one into a moneymaker?
Now, friend, you know, I am elected and I ain't never rode on it.
Neither have I. Yeah, We've only read about it. It's like the Batcave. That's what Rahm used to call it. But I mean, what could we do to turn that one into a moneymaker?
Well, you know, friend, I'm going to tell you this. If I get an invite, I'm going to call you like, your friend, you want, where you at? I'm going to Uber to you, and we're going to Uber, and we're going to ride this road. I don't know the depths of the Batcave. I don't know the dimensions of the Batcave. I do know it is a security. It's a security means for our mayor. It's a security means for government officials that we bring in, whether it is, you know, national or international. And so I don't know if that's a homeland security. No touch you can't have. I don't know. And so I look forward to, and again, I've started those conversations to see if it's feasible. But again, when we look at development in that area, does that even make sense? But then also, do we really need more congestion, right? Because what we think is also limited, it becomes another source, yeah, for revenue, but congestion, right? We already have a congested city with cars, and we don't want to get the reputation of Atlanta or Los Angeles, where it takes you, what used to take you 25-30 minutes now takes you an hour to get to, because everybody is on this road that's not made for the mass amount of traffic that we have in the city.
What about some other revenue ideas we've heard over the years? Video gaming, authorizing that in Chicago. Would you like to see that happen? Will you recommend
that? Absolutely. I know that when Bally's came into, you know, the mix and into play, that was a conversation that, you know, was given to them first rights to see if they want to extend gaming into community, you know, them controlling the slot machine, so forth and so on. It's something that, you know, at one time they delayed. We're, you know, revisiting that conversation. But gaming is something that's like looked at as something that most neighborhood bars want to have because their patrons want. When you look at the neighboring suburbs, right, Cicero, Burbank, right, they have those. And a lot of Chicagoans literally cross the street and go and have their little mini casino moment. Let's consider this, please, good people. Not everybody that goes to a bar wants to go to a casino. Right. And so if it's a win-win situation for a bar owner, as well as it's respected and received by the community, why not?
Right. And why not we already have these sweepstakes machines that the city gets nothing from.
Which I had to shut down one on 75th Street. right? These illegal casinos, I call them. But back to the idea of gaming, I mean, again, to have gaming at a local bar that's supported by a community, it's a revenue source for the local bar. It's a push to the local economy. Again, micro impact with macro results. And so, again, gaming is something that we're going to look into. And if it's a safe model supported by the community, why not?
Everybody and how about a service tax? How about a service tax on, you know, professional services, extending the sales tax to that?
Well, what we don't want is for consumers in Chicago to be priced out for the cost to be served. And what we don't want is small business, mid-sized businesses that provide services to literally not be able to maintain because they're losing their clientele. And so we're going to look at a service tax, but if a service tax takes away from first the business revenue, then we got to look at the numbers. Bottom line, we want to create business. This is about
it's a service economy, a barber, a gym membership, a hairdresser, an accountant, a lawyer. What's wrong with taxing that? Those are professional services.
I look at my barbershop, right? Like, shout out to Razor Red. You know, like when I go and I sit in that barbershop, it is a form of therapy. It's great organizing. Great ideas come. First of all, the cost to get a haircut now has already gone up, right? The materials for, you know, the barber has skyrocketed, right? The cost to have electricity going into the barbershop, everything is going up. Inflation is a trip, which we don't control. Hopefully when the feds drop the rates, as they projected 3 times a year, we might see a little relief, but inflation has ballooned prices that makes the burden for service providers more. So someone like me, I'm grateful that, you know, Razor Red is, you know, cutting my hair, but Razor Red has a family to feed, right? And so again,
so you're reluctant to tax Razor Red
I'm reluctant to tax the small people. Right. Because the small people.
Well, the customer would pay it. The customer would pay. You think they would stop getting haircuts because of it?
Well, the customer would pay, but you also have to consider the material cost for the service provider. That's still going up. Right. And so you're dealing with who's going to pay for inflation. Right. And so when we look at going back to what I said earlier, a micro economy, those barbershops, beauty salons, nail shops, accountants, those are the ones who make communities thrive. Let's go back to what it was 40, 50 years ago. You would get your tax prepared not by H&R Block, but by Mr. Jones Accounting Services right there on 71st Street. And so when you walk down the block, you can go get your taxes done, go have a little drink because you're mad what you got to pay Uncle Sam, and then walk back home. Right. So you start taxing those businesses. Now you're going to start seeing vacancies. When you start seeing vacancies, what then do you see? Crime? Because when criminals attack, they attack places where there's no value. And so what we don't want is board up because we want to put a burden on either the service provider or the service recipient. Because
the service provider has to keep paying. How about taxing city income over $100,000?
Well, I'll tell you this. I mean, everybody has to pay their fair share, right? Like billionaires and millionaires are not even paying taxes, right? Like it makes no sense that a mother who's paying $45,000, $50,000 a year, I mean, making $45,000 to $50,000 a year, working two jobs, robbing Peter to pay Paul, hoping that an iPad would keep their kid occupied, is paying more taxes than, you know, Ken Griffin and company. Like, We have to make sure that there's a fair distribution of taxes, period.
So would you favor a city income tax over $100,000?
I am in favor of a fair tax rate. And I don't think it's fair that millionaire and billionaires know how to work a tax code while those who are working day to day, because I was raised under this. The middle class is a trick to keep you occupied. Either you got it or you don't got it. And when I look at my community where the average income is $47,652 and they're paying higher taxes than a millionaire or billionaire, that's not right. Right?
So what about a wealth tax on stock holdings and personal liquid assets? Might you recommend that?
Again, fair share, passing wealth into trust funds, trust fund babies, being able to construct and get away with not paying their fair share, but using service workers to increase their lifestyle. That's not fair. We need tax parity, tax equity. Because at the end of the day, again, learning the tax code and playing games and beating by the rules, but yet using services, you need to pay your taxes so the police officers can go to work. But then at the same end of the spectrum, the wealthy are complaining about safety. You don't pay taxes to pay the salary of the police officer. Again, you don't pay your taxes. How are you going to have firehouses open? How are you going to continue to pay for firefighters? Right. And then you get mad when there's no response because we have to cut workforce because the taxes are not paying for public service jobs. Make it
Alderman
make sense.
William Hall, we could talk forever about revenue or about your background. You're a fascinating guy and you're a great talker. Thanks for joining us, sir. We will have you back and we will see what you come up with on this. When will you have these recommendations, do you think?
Within the next 30 days.
Okay. All righty, sir. Thank you for joining us and we will see you all next week.
Thank you, Fred.